at one point, you had said the thing that finally helped you really improve was some sort of testosterone replacement program.
That was the thing I tried the last time and was successful in getting me from being out of work and unable to work to getting back to work. That turned out to be more a symptom than a cause of depression. What I learned was when you have depression, your testosterone levels drop dramatically. And when they drop, see, testosterone is a hormone that gives you your zest for life, your drive for living, your desire to get up in the morning, your desire to go out and do something for your career, your desire to raise your kids, your whole drive. It's the drive hormone. It's the thing that gives you energy to want to go out and conquer the world and live and love and enjoy existence. You know, when those levels are real low, you don't want to get out of bed. Well, I was when I was given a testosterone injection, and I found that it so dramatically changed my feeling in this depression, I mistakenly concluded that low testosterone levels were the cause of my depression. But what I learned later was that it was in fact a symptom of the depression.
Kind of a chicken and the egg sort of thing?
Yeah, it's a chicken and the egg thing, because when I was healthy and the depression wasn't there and I was living like you live or anybody else, it was just a normal life, the testosterone levels came back on their own without any shots. And that was quite shocking to me and surprising. Hmm. And my brother, who also deals with depression, had the same thing happen. So the truth is, when I'm doing well, they don't need any of those shots and everything's fine, the levels are fine. But if you have stress in your life, a great deal of stress, the body won't produce testosterone. And there's no stress like the stress of depression. So what had happened was I had had depression for quite a bit of time. I was out of work. I was trying to get back to work, trying to find something that would make me feel better. And I ended up hearing about this guy in Baltimore. I flew out there. But I was already 6-7 weeks into the depression. And what helped when I was out there was this shot came when I was probably at my lowest level of testosterone, and it was the dramatic change really made me feel better. But it couldn't prevent me the next time from going into a depression. You know, it wasn't something that could stop me from getting a depression. It was just a helpful thing to take to get out of it, but it wasn't able to keep me from ever experiencing symptoms again. And it wasn't by itself able to do it. For instance, later on, I had an experience where I took it right after getting hit with depression. I mean, right away, right then and there, and it didn't do anything. I think what had helped that last time was seven weeks into it, I was already probably moving through the worst stage of it and was probably on my way back, because it does have a cycle. It's interesting that when I wasn't getting treated for depression but was chasing it as a physical illness, it would still have a cycle. It still would cycle in and cycle out through the year without, you know, and when I would cycle out, I would credit some treatment, whatever one I was doing at that time. But then the next year, it would follow the same pattern without me using that treatment. And I realized, oh, I'm just crediting whatever's working at the point I'm cycling out with being the ticket. And so it got very hard for me to read what was working. And I soon began to just concentrate instead on understanding these patterns. The change from summer into fall would send me into it. The change from winter into spring would send me into it. Summers were always good. And I began to study that. What's going on there? And the understanding the human body and the cycles of the year. And to this day, I can honestly say I'm still learning about all this. And I'm probably not done with depression for life. And I probably haven't gotten to the point where I say I got a firm handle on it. I know a hell of a lot more than I did when I was 36 years of age. But it's a complicated picture, and it's, staying healthy is an interesting long-term project for me. And It's fascinating and kind of exasperating at the same time.
Did you have an episode of depression last month?
Yeah.
I believe you're off the air for almost 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's my body. It comes to visit every now and then, and
right,
we hang out together, and then it moves on.
What do you do on a daily? Are you taking? I mean, I have no idea what the drugs are. I've heard of Prozac.
I've been on. I've been off. I've been able to sometimes go a year and a half off medication. Haven't had a single symptom. I think antidepressants are very good for getting you out of a depressed state. I think they're wonderful. I don't necessarily believe in them for the long term. I think if you stay on them for a long time, I think they can often lose their effectiveness. Not all the time, but sometimes I've known people who've had to up the dose because their body just adjusts to it over time. I like to use it to get out of the depression. I don't like to use it as a continuing maintenance. We're all guinea pigs on this antidepressant depression medication. It hasn't been around long enough to know what a lifetime on it is going to do to us. I have learned a lot about alternative approaches, and I am actually going to be trying one here at the end of this month that I hope to report on that is not only helpful in the treatment of depression, but in the treatment of all diseases. And I'm working with a guy who I think is going to either be the greatest healer the planet has ever seen in the coming years, or he's going to be shot because he's too threatening to the big money makers out there in the medical world. But
can you talk about what it involves?
No, I can't now.
Okay.
But if things... I'm bringing a lot of people to him with diseases, Parkinson's, cancer, other illnesses, and he's right now successfully treating people with MS and HIV and cirrhosis of the liver, and what else?
When you say multiple... successfully treating, is he...
Healing them of these
healing
things.
Them.
Yeah, hepatitis C and... on all levels, you know, the one thing I've learned about disease is it operates on multiple levels. You know, there's a spiritual component, a physical component, a psychological component. They have learned that a lot of illnesses are you know, can be affected by energy work, and ultimately the human body is this gigantic pulsating, you know, ball of energy, and diseases are energies. And And physics-wise, they are learning on the frontiers of science now that that everything, even on its most basic level, is a frequency. And there are some fascinating things. I tell you, I have seen some things and talked to some people and learned some things in the world of medicine over the last year or two that convince me that we are in the last years of pharmaceuticals altogether, that in our lifetime we will see them vanish as a treatment. And I also happen to believe that scores of diseases once thought incurable are not, and that a lot of it has more to do with suppression by parties who have a vested interest in making sure that some of these don't see the light of day, some of these cures, because there's not money to be made off them the way there is in the pharmaceutical industry, one of the most powerful industries on the planet. And I have just really entered a world that both intrigues and fascinates me and terrifies me, in that I know people whose lives have been threatened, and I know people who have had to move out of the country. And it's just a real interesting world. So as I learn more, I'll reveal more on the air. But I just will say that I continue to pursue this with the same energy I always have, because I have a vested interest in being a healthy person.
Obviously. So. Well, I'm interested in hearing what happens
with
it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure everyone else will be too.
Yeah. That'll be in July. I'll probably be doing more stuff on this.
Okay. And that's a good part of the broadcast, too, is when you do have experts on the various things in cancer. And
yeah, because there's so much information out there that's just not getting out to the public. And
that
it's
you
all
don't hear,
it's
right?
All hopeful. It's really hopeful. I mean, the one thing people need to know is that this is the best time on planet Earth to be sick. Never have we known more, and never have we had access to information, because of how quickly we can get information now and how easy it is to disseminate. Never has it been more possible to bypass the people who are less interested in your well-being and more interested in making money, and move, in fact, to the cure. And I don't ever accept, ever accept a lousy diagnosis or a lousy prognosis, rather, from your doctor. Don't ever accept that prognosis, including your imminent demise, your a terminal illness diagnosis. It's BS. It's all BS. The cures are out there.
Well, that's hopeful and good to know.
Yeah.
It sounds like you have Paul Harvey's philosophy. Every, what is it, every today is better than...
I don't have that in all things.
And yesterday?
Paul Harvey's line is, every tomorrow has been better than every yesterday. And then there was the jazz musician Artie Shaw who said famously, nothing gets better. I'm sort of in between the two.
Okay.
In the world of... you know, I will not say that this is the greatest time on earth to be alive in every area, but it 50 years ago, God help, the people who were sick, the people who had stuff like depression, the poor souls who dealt with what I dealt with, they had a miserable life. Their parents didn't understand them. Their wives and husbands didn't understand them. Their kids didn't understand them. The doctors didn't understand them. Their disease was called nerves, or people were told it's all in their head. Get over it. Snap out of it. Years and years ago, with cancer, if you got cancer, you went to a guy with a white lab coat who supposedly had all the answers. And, you know, if he said you had 3 months to live, you had 3 months to live, and then you just died. And that was a hell of a time, a lousy time to be alive. But 1,000 years earlier, the Chinese were doing extraordinary things in medicine. The Chinese were curing bipolar. We didn't even know what the hell bipolar was. We didn't even have a word for it. The Chinese diagnosed bipolar ailment or illness 2,000 years ago. People in China were living, you know, into their hundreds, and they had an incredible handle on medicine. So there, it isn't that this is the best time ever. It's just that this is the best time, I think, in the history of the United States to get sick, if you hope to get better.
We're sort of in a good cycle right now.
This is a great time for being sick in the United States, but. You know, in the 19th century in the Western United States, the Native Americans had a wonderful handle on healing. They had a wonderful, they knew all the herbs. And of course, this is something that we've forgotten too, is that for every ailment you can get, there's something either growing on planet Earth or in the sea that can cure it. This planet was. That every disease it offers us, it offers a cure. There is no such thing as no cure. And the Indians had this incredible knowledge of the natural world and its ability to heal all these various illnesses. Now, a lot of that's been lost with what happened to them. But I wouldn't have mind being sick in the 19th century in the Western United States either. But meanwhile, in the Eastern United States in the 19th century, they decided bloodletting was a good way to help heal people. And strange little things like that or other odd things that have turned out to be horrible and ridiculous and caused more problems. But this is a great time to bypass the so-called experts and get at information all around the globe that's backed up scientifically and is really proving to be amazingly helpful in all ailments. But one thing I'm particularly hopeful about is that people do not need to die of cancer. And I am particularly appalled at this ridiculous war on cancer in this country that is claiming right now one out of three people are getting cancer right now, and we're moving toward one out of two people who can expect to get cancer. And after 1972 or three, when Nixon declared war on cancer, however many years that's been, in 2005, we're losing it. We're not winning it. And we need to change our tactics, but these vested interests don't want to change because it is an incredible money-making business. For everybody suffering from cancer, there's six people making an extraordinary living with nice BMWs and beautiful homes, and it's a racket.
Wow, can you feel depressive episodes coming on? Or do they come on slowly, or do they hit like a? All of a sudden, it's a ton of bricks.
Well,
at times.
I will say when the symptoms first start, I often am unaware of them. I'll think that I'm just having a bad day, or I think that I just didn't get enough sleep the night before. I don't associate them automatically with depression, but soon enough, it becomes quite clear. And the older I get, the better I get at picking it up early.
Okay. Can you feel when you're doing a Mishki broadcast? Does the depression, or if you're in the early stages of it, do you think it does affect the show itself?
Oh yeah, I used to do shows. I don't know if people remember this, but this was before I had the formal diagnosis and didn't know what the hell was going on. I'd come in some nights and I'd say I burned out on the paper. I can't look at the paper. I just associated with the bad news in the paper, and I just got tired of all the bad news. But I'd say, I can't even open the paper today, so I don't have anything for the show. Well, that was depression.
Okay.
That was me being unable to, you know, that when I had the worst of my depression, I couldn't read two words of a headline in the newspaper. I couldn't see a corner of a photograph in a newspaper. I couldn't listen to a radio. You know, so when I was saying that I couldn't read that newspaper that day, I'm thinking, I must just be burning out on the news. You know, there is no such thing with me as burnout. It's depression. And I don't know what burnout is for other people. It may be a legitimate thing, but for me, that's a synonym for my illness is kicking in.
Do you ever do therapy now or in the past?
Oh, yeah. I'm a firm believer in that. In fact, I would never, ever, ever advise anybody being treated for depression to try and be treated without the therapy component. That component is critical and helpful and very, very necessary to... See, healing from depression is never one thing. What I've come to believe in all illness is that you got to look at it holistically. You have to treat it from so many different directions and have this team of approaches working together to get you healthy. We got to get away from this idea that the answer lies in a little pill. There's the happy pill that makes everything all better. You gotta think in terms of the big picture, spiritually, mentally, physically, nutritionally, with your approach to life, removing anger, altruism, compassion, the importance of keeping stress down, of appreciation for life, gratitude, and all the different things that play into being a happy and healthy person. We do not stress enough in America the big picture, all the different things. We tend to love the magic bullet. That's what we look for, the silver bullet.
Right.
And it's not that way. Illness is not that way. That's not how we get sick, and that's not how we get better.
Okay. With your episodes of depression, is the reverse also true, that you come out of it usually as a more slowly thing, gradually are getting better?
Oh, yeah.
Or can there be some days when you're a lot better all of a sudden?
No, it's a slow process. I mean, it's not always where every day I get a little better and pretty soon I'm 100%. I could get better one day and a little worse the next and then better the next. But, I mean, overall, a two-week stretch, looking back, I'll say I'm better now than I was 2 weeks ago. And I'll be better in 2 weeks than I am now.
Okay.
Over the long haul, you can see that. Often they tell people with depression who say, I'm not getting better. I'm not getting better. Nothing's working. If you had kept a journal and could read back 3 weeks, you'd realize you're better now already, because you'd realize that that person writing 3 weeks ago sounds much worse than you sound right now.
Huh.
But your mind often forgets what you were thinking 3 weeks ago. And it's difficult to realize. Sometimes it takes months to get better for some people. And after a while, they get real. If you don't feel you're getting better, you can get even more depressed over the fact that you just don't think there's any hope that you're ever going to feel better. But that writing in a journal often allows you to say, well, the guy who wrote that sounds worse than I feel today. So obviously a month ago I was doing much worse. And that's why that's helpful. Because there's a lot of memory loss in depression. Your memory gets your memory is bad, and you need help from people to understand that you are getting better. You just don't remember how bad you were.
Okay. Now, I've heard many times, and one of your listeners brought this up too, but Tom, do you think there's any sort of link between depression and creativity?
I don't know. I've heard people knock that around.
I mean, in some sick way, does it help you with the broadcast or help with
the
humor?
That's not true. That's not true. That last statement you say, I don't believe is accurate.
Okay.
When you talk about a connection, what I was thinking was there is a connection between – there was a guy who told me, a psychiatrist told me one time, that the brain of a creative person can be a double-edged sword in that, you know, it's a very, very active, very busy place. And there's a lot going on up there. And that can work for you on a given day and against you on another day. It can be your best friend or your worst enemy at times, and so it's connected in that way. But it is not connected in that depressed people, because of depression, become more creative people. The depression doesn't make you become more creative, but creative people may be susceptible to depression in a greater way. But nobody does better work depressed. That's a lie. In fact, okay. There's a guy out with a book right now saying just that. But I would not do better work depressed than I would not depressed. I would do worse depressed. Depressed is, you know, true depression. I think people are confusing. You might write a wonderful love song after breaking up with a girl, but that's not depression. You're sad, and you're playing off the energy of that sadness to write something beautiful. But that's not depression. Depression is someone going through your brain and pulling cords out of sockets. You're becoming less effective as a human being in all areas. You're functioning on a lower level. You are not better in anything when you're depressed. You're worse at everything.
Okay.
So that's, but I will say this, and this is something very different. Depression has a wonderful gift that it leaves you with, as all suffering does. There's always a gift you get at the end, and that is that you become a better person for having had the suffering. So you do win in that regard. Everybody who suffers greatly is left with the gift that comes from going to those depths, which is a deepening of your own soul and your own ability to empathize, and your own ability to be a compassionate person. That's increased by your own suffering. Very few people who suffer deeply fail then to feel for others who suffer deeply. So that's a good thing. That's the great thing that comes out of it. I wouldn't make the trade myself, but I don't have a choice in the matter.
Okay. And another one of your listeners, I'm going to read this one word for word to get your comments on it. He said, "You've said that your depression manifests itself physically. My friends who suffer from the illness have had such a bleak outlook. To my knowledge, I've never heard you put yourself down or say anything that would lead anyone to believe you had a poor self-image. Is your case unique, or are you shielding us from the worst of it?"
I don't know how to answer that question. There's some part of me that doesn't feel I have a bad self-image. I've often viewed depression as I'm just some normal guy walking on the street and a bus came and hit me. Okay. And the bus was depression. And I just think of it that way. I think I just got a disease. I didn't have it and then I had it. But the reason I say I have difficulty answering that is that I don't understand this illness 100% yet. And there may be a component there that I still need to learn about, having to do with my makeup from birth and patterns of thought and things that I contributed to this. See, I can look into the family at large, my extended family, and see this depression around. So I say, okay, there's a genetic susceptibility. I have a weakness. This I am susceptible to it. But okay, that's a susceptibility. That doesn't mean I necessarily have to get it. You know, you may have a susceptibility to I don't know. I'm thinking of different examples, and I'm finding parts of them that don't fit very well. So I'm, I'm wondering if there isn't a part of me that makes the susceptibility, that then makes what would be just a susceptibility, a full blown depression because I do A, B, or C, or view the world in this way or that way, or because of how I developed over my formative years, I contribute to it. And I won't be surprised to learn that there's a contributing factor there. But can I say that I have a poor self-image? No, I can't say that. But you know how you can't get into other people's heads and see how they see things? A lot of times what happens with me is when you live in your own brain all your life, you don't know how other people see themselves. So you don't know how different you're doing things from the norm or what other people are doing or how they were raised or how their brain works or how they see life or themselves. So maybe there's still more I got to learn there. But I've just, again, always thought of this as, up till now, as I was just walking along and a bus hit me. And for some reason, periodically, that same bus comes around the corner and hits me again. It hits me a lot. And I really want to kill that bastard driving that thing.
Well, it's good you can look at it that way. Yeah. And seeing it as that.
Yeah, I really don't think I brought it on, but I'm not willing to say I don't play a part in its severity or maybe in its frequency. I think that I do have some sort of genetic susceptibility because of how common it is in my family, unless we all environmentally have experienced similar things that make it more to do with some way we view the world and less to do with pure brain chemistry. But I've sure talked to a lot of people who have spent their lives trying to find anything other than just a simple brain chemistry component to it and who have eventually thrown up their hands and said the hell with it. I'm simply not going to look anymore. I'm tired of it. I can't find any other cause. It must just be something a diabetic has to take insulin. I've got this susceptibility, this weakness. I have to take my antidepressant. So it's complex picture. How many years going now, and how much do I know? A lot, but how uncertain am I still? You still hear a lot of uncertainty in my voice, and that's after years of studying this and living with it.
So. Right. In all honesty, are you surprised that KSTP has kept you on after all this?
Yeah, although I shouldn't be, because the one thing the Hubbards are known for around here is they never let you go when you're sick. They never screw over a sick person.
Oh, so this is a gig you keep running so you can keep your job?
As long as I'm sick, I can keep my job. They could fire me when I'm well. I happen to be well right now, and so this would be a good time for them to can me. But no, they'll never turn on someone who's down. That is, and I don't know that I could say that about anybody else in town. I work for a family business, and family businesses are run differently than big corporations. So.
Okay.